We have to win the war and quit feeling like we're winning these little shallow victories of the strategic reserve or what have you, if we want the bright orange future that everyone pretends, at least, like they actually want.
I was having a great time over the weekend. I just sold my car, had some cash, Bitcoin's dipping. This is superb.
Solo mining, man, as far as we're concerned, we want everyone to have one. The same way that you're running a node, you run a solo miner. And you never know. I can guarantee you of one thing, though. It will be your number one addiction.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony here with me. Guys, let's jump right in. We've got the dip. So Bitcoin is down 30% or so off its all-time high. We dipped below 77,000 for the first time since November. Can you guys even believe it? Bitcoin is dipping. Are we in a bear market? Rick, are you freaked out? Why don't you give your thoughts?
Well, I don't want to celebrate too much, because I know there's quite a lot of people in a bit of pain with this dip, right? Maybe they invested a bit too much, or maybe they used a bit of leverage. But for me, I'm really, really quite pleased about it, right? I'm trying to build my Bitcoin stack. Like, you know, famously a couple of years ago, I got hacked and lost everything. So man, lower prices is like great news for me, right? I mean, it wasn't related. It was just perfect timing. But I actually sold my car at the weekend because I, you know, work remotely. We've got two cars, don't need two cars. Sold that. It's like, oh man, I was having a great time over the weekend. I just sold my car, had some cash, Bitcoin's dipping. This is superb. But let's try and put some perspective on it, maybe, for people who maybe, you know, invested this year or last year because of the ETFs and because of this whole, you know, Trump administration supporting Bitcoin. People might have dived in recently, and hey man, listen, if you bought Bitcoin at $109,000 for the first time and today it's sitting somewhere around 80, yeah, you are gonna feel that, right? It's gonna be a kick in the stomach, and you start questioning yourself and thinking, God, you know, am I an idiot? Was everyone right? Is Bitcoin really a Ponzi? Is this whole thing going to zero? And it's quite scary. To put some those concerns at bay a little bit, like, bear in mind that I think during the 2017 bull run, there was at least like six corrections of between 30% and 40%, right? So I don't know, maybe when people watch this show, like when they see us quite relaxed and just kind of laughing about it, it's not arrogance or anything like that. It's just like we've seen this like time and time again over the years, like a 30% sort of correction in the price is not a shocking thing. And also, you know, I wish people could bear in mind that we are still up over 300% in just over a couple of years. So, you know, it's kind of funny that you could be up 300% in 2 years and then you have a little sort of 30% correction and everyone's freaking out. You just got to hodl, right? Like it's par for the course. If you think about what Bitcoin is, it's money. It's the next evolution in money. It was never going to just be like a smooth transition. Most of the world outside of our bubble, I think actually that's what I've become most aware of this year is, you know, go on Bitcoin Twitter and everybody's losing their minds, right? Because they're like, this doesn't make sense. The US government just said they love Bitcoin and now the price is going down. How, you know, and their brains sort of blowing up. But you've got to get away from being like pulled into these short-term news cycles, right? Do you remember when the ETFs launched? Everyone said we'll be at 500,000 in no time. This is that short time preference that will kill you, right? Like if you're just desperately looking at the chart every day, you're going to have a bad time. If you're going to buy Bitcoin, the best way to do it is to go in with a minimum 5-year time horizon, like minimum 5 years, at least one cycle, at least one halving. Otherwise, you're going to get shaken out. You're going to get shaken out and someone else is going to buy you Bitcoin and you're going to panic sell it. And then at some point, 3 or 4 years from now, you are going to be really, really upset with yourself. So it's normal. Everything's fine. You'll be fine. Maybe get some more while it's on discount. I mean, one of the best things, I didn't come up with this, but someone said it to me, had an effect on me in the early years. They said, look, let's say you've got a favorite pair of trainers in the store, right? And they're normally $100. And all of a sudden you see them on sale for $50. Well, what you do is you dash into the store and you buy a pair, right? So look, if you've understood Bitcoin, you think it's the best form of money. If for some crazy reason, a load of people are selling it and the price is really cheap, you run into the store and you buy some, right? So I don't know. Hopefully people aren't too worried. It'll all be fine.
Yeah, no, a couple of comments on that. So first of all, if you bought it 109,000, it means you've started a lot later than people who are doing Bitcoin podcasts and writing books on this stuff. Like, this is your opportunity to up your stack. Like, you're not down unless your time horizon is a couple of months, right? Like, and so you need to just reorient the way you think about all of this stuff. The second thing I'd say, not financial advice, but in the United States, at least, you can tax loss harvest. Sell that Bitcoin that you bought at 109, take advantage of the cap of the loss, buy it right away at 77 or whatever. We're at 80, I think, right now at the time of recording. But and then you can apply that loss to your tax returns next year. So again, not financial advice, but like, just be smart about this. If you didn't buy KYC Bitcoin, then maybe the tax implications do or don't matter, depending on your view of the state. But Tony, what's your reaction to this?
Man, I'm very happy. I'm very happy watching, you know, everybody freak out, because it's very clear to me that no one understands Bitcoin. Because the first thing you need to do when you get involved in Bitcoin is remove the word investment. Bitcoin is not an investment. Bitcoin is money. It is your savings account. If you're thinking of this as an investment, like a stock, you're going to get wrecked beyond belief, because this is one of the most volatile spaces. And it's volatile not because, you know, it has no value. It's volatile because it's currently replacing decades of a corrupt legacy fiat system that's entrenched in every corner of your existence. So it's not going to be, you know, like a smooth tide event. What you're doing in Bitcoin is you are swapping out worthless money printed by thieves, right, to fund wars and, you know, all sorts of shenanigans, into sound money. That's what you're doing. So the term buying, you know, like, I mean, that's, everybody uses that word, but it's not really buying. It's like you're upgrading your money from rubbish to actual money. And so once that's clear to you, then every dip is good news, because it just signals to you that more people still don't understand this. And so you are at like a massive advantage compared to the rest of the world. There's nothing wrong with Bitcoin. The price is the most meaningless metric, other than letting you know that other people still don't understand anything. If you're treating Bitcoin as a risk on asset, you're at the losing end of this game, 100% guaranteed. It's the most risk off asset you will ever know. But to get to that level of conviction, you've got to do the work that we've done. You read the books, watch the videos, you know, ask the right questions, understand the tech, hold it in self-custody. But what you don't want to do is put all your eggs in one basket from now, because we're still living, you know, in a fiat world for the most part. And so if you're going 100%, and, you know, obviously the volatility is a thing, then you're going to find yourself, you know, stressed out beyond belief, because you still have bills to pay. But if you do it gradually, you know, and you slowly up that gradually as you understand this more, you'll be just fine. The fundamentals haven't changed. Price dips doesn't mean Bitcoin is failing, doesn't mean something is broken, doesn't mean any of that stuff. So instead of chasing all these, you know, ass-licking, you know, people following politicians and institutions and all that other garbage, do yourself a favor, study the tech itself, read the white paper if you haven't done it, and ignore everything else. Follow the Bitcoin hash rate. It's at an all-time high. That is the only metric that tells you Bitcoin is succeeding. Forget the narrative that Bitcoin is a store of value alone. It is not. It is a store of value and money, meaning you can use it in the same way you use your dollars and euros. You can use it to buy stuff. There's no such thing as nobody sells stuff for Bitcoin. There's thousands of places around the world. You just have to get off of your ass, do a little bit of research, and look for them. Yes, it takes a little bit of effort at this day and age. We're not living in the year 2030, 2040 yet, but we're getting there. So if you want to get there, you know, solid as a rock, you have to do the work and you have to ignore the noise, focus on the signal, hold Bitcoin in 100% self-custody. And you'll see, you'll be smiling way sooner than you think.
Yeah, I think to unwind people from this notion that Bitcoin's a risk-on asset, I think just requires a fundamental understanding of the problem it solves. Like Tony, you're not a macroeconomics guy, but like you experienced firsthand the implications of fiat debasement and what happens when it gets taken too far. I told you guys offline, I'm reading The Big Print by Larry Lepard. I think that book is probably as good as any that I've read that just sort of defines the problem. And it's one of those things that once you see it, you can't unsee it. And it becomes very clear why we need a solution and why gold was the best option at one point in time, but it's a far inferior option to Bitcoin, and why eventually we're by necessity, we will flock into Bitcoin as humans. And it's just education, and hopefully these sorts of conversations convince someone who bought at 109,000 to not sell because out of panic, but to maybe sell for tax loss harvesting purposes and you know, a more productive reason. It takes time. We're on the path, and people just need to be enlightened as to what's going on. I'm going to share this next one. So, Rick, I want you to comment on this first. So, Mandrick said that 2014 to 2015 was the hardest time to be a Bitcoin holder. Now it's just a flat line on a zoomed out chart. I think you had sort of an interesting take on this, and I know you were around then. So, why don't you you give your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I actually agree that it was tougher back then. I suppose it's like a personal experience thing more than anything else, right? The reason I don't think that it was harder back then is honestly the culture was different and the people involved were different as well. So, you know, back in 2014 or 2015, you still had this really strong like cypherpunk ethos in Bitcoin, right? So actually, I maybe enjoyed that period of time more than I do now, because you found more people that were interested in the separation of money and state. You know, most people were pretty anti-government in general, and you really felt like you were on this sort of crusade to, well, like we're all here for, end the Fed and stop this insane money printing, you know, that's impoverishing people. Now I find things maybe like more frustrating. You might have heard this from other people that have been around a long time. Like you can get a bit jaded after a while, because, you know, I log into Twitter now and everybody's either celebrating about the fact that the government are buying Bitcoin or not buying Bitcoin. And, you know, they give so much credibility to these politicians. You know, Bitcoin outperforms everything for 10 years, despite the politicians screaming at it and calling it rubbish. But now, for some reason, everybody thinks that we need politicians to give it any credibility, and that's what will make the price pump. And it's a little bit nauseating, right? So I don't know, maybe I felt like back then, like our tribe was a bigger sort of portion of the Bitcoin community. I mean, look, you're never going to stop this, right? Like, obviously, as Bitcoin gets bigger and bigger and bigger, the community grows and the diversity of people in that and their views and opinions also sort of grows. But it does sort of dilute the purpose of the mission a little bit. And so, you know, you find yourself like, oh, God, how do you get the right signal out through this noise now about what we're really trying to accomplish and what the real prize is if we can end the Fed? Because a lot of people here, I think, are just, they're just desperate to get rich, right? Let's be honest. Most people are just here to be rich, and they don't care how it happens and what the cost is. The counter side to that is that if you're here just to get rich and you don't understand what the mission is about and what Bitcoin is about, then you're far more likely to be the type of person that panics when there's a 20% drop, because all you're thinking is about is your bank balance, which you're still measuring in dollars, which doesn't make a lot of sense either. But what I do like about Mandrick's tweet, because he might have just had a different experience to me, right? Like he might have found those dips really savage. I maybe didn't, because I had less money on the line because Bitcoin was a lot cheaper, right? But what I think is really important about his tweet is that he said it's this idea that you need to zoom out. You know, like 2014 and 15 had savage bear markets. So did 2017. But the point he's trying to make is if you zoom out, it just looks like a flat line on the chart now. And believe me, 10, 20 years from now, you're going to look back at the 2017 peak and look back at the 2021 peak. And, you know, who knows, maybe the 2025 peak, like maybe it's going to go down for a while. Who knows? But if you can sort out your time horizon, this is the crux of it. If you can sort out your time horizon and think in decades instead of months, then you will reach a point where you look back at the chart and these dips are going to be imperceptible. So, you know, Mandrake's really dropping a bit of signal there. If you can grasp it, that like, this is really nothing. It's not important. If anything, it's a big opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't around then. And that's why my stack is still small. I'm figuring this stuff out. But Tony, what's your take here?
Yeah, man, I also wasn't paying attention in 2014 and 2015 the way I should have. I was having way too much fiat fun back then. So that cost me dearly, unfortunately. But reading back, you know, during that time frame, for sure, there was a cleaner tribe of really focused individuals that are, you know, sticking behind, you know, the true purpose of Bitcoin's creation. Now, you know, it's diluted with all sorts of, you know, shapes and colors that come into the space for whatever reason. But yeah, you're right, Rick. Everybody wants to be rich, no matter which way it happens, right? Like, just give me the money, make me rich, let me buy my Lambo and let me, you know, get my back scratched every afternoon. You know, that's really what everybody's thinking without the consequences of that. You know, like they assume they're just going to get rich and nobody's going to bother them. But here's a stark reminder that, you know, I also lived in a place where I thought no one was going to bother me. And then they bothered me a lot. I mean, they bothered me so much, actually, that they left me with $70 to my name. So if you think you're living somewhere, you know, nice and sunny and rosy, and that you're just going to get rich and that nobody's going to come your way and like force a vaccine, you know, down your throat or make you wear a mask or just because you are who you are. Well, my dear friend, you are in for a massively rude awakening, because that is not the way the world works. You know, the fiat system incentivizes all that bullshit that you don't like. And sooner or later, if that's not ended, your turn will come and you're going to have a hard time dealing with it. So Bitcoin, we need to focus on the essence of Bitcoin, the separation of money and state. There is nothing else bigger than that. Once that's understood by a big enough number of the population, that's it, man. That's where you see hyper-Bitcoinization and all the glorious things that you've read about and know about, you know, around Bitcoin. That's when it starts to really come to fruition. But until that happens, you have people chasing politicians and bootlicking institutions just for the number go up. One, these people are going to lose their money at some point, or they're going to get it stolen from them, seized from them, or locked out. Something along those lines is going to happen. And it just delays the inevitable. So for those that understand the process, hold Bitcoin in self-custody, it really is a great exercise in patience. It teaches you to put your emotions on ice. And what I find helps a lot is just surround yourself with like-minded people. Even if that means formatting most of the folks that you know, that's fine. You know, like I'm no longer in touch with 99% of people that I knew, and I knew a lot of people. Do I miss them? Not a chance, not a second. The new people that have come into my life now align with, you know, the world that I want to live in. And so once you do that, all it takes is start with one person, then move it up two people. And before you know it, all the noise just doesn't matter. You don't even notice it anymore unless somebody brings it to your attention, you know, via 50 DMs telling you that something is going on that is really insignificant. So that's what I have to say. I wish I was around paying attention in 2014, 2015, like he was. I mean, I think it's a missed opportunity. But, you know, we are where we are now, better late than never. The future is really bright, very optimistic about all of this. But you got to do the work. Nothing more to it.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think we're obviously not late. That's the crazy thing. Because if people are selling Bitcoin now and we're at $80,000, like this is the crazy thing. Like, if I could give someone some perspective, right? So, like, man, here's the funny thing, right? In 2015, right, I'm thinking, how the hell is Bitcoin not $1 million? How come no one's figured this out? What the hell is going on? In 2016, how the hell is Bitcoin not $1 million? 2017, how the hell is Bitcoin not $1 million? This will happen for ages. And you come in, you think you're late, right? Like, man, when I got in at like, I don't know, I think we were buying coins $200, like maybe even some under $100. And we're thinking, damn, wish I knew about this when it was under a dollar. Like that's just natural, right? Like I promise you, right? Give it 5 or 10 years and everyone's gonna be like, damn, I wish I was looking at Bitcoin under $1 million. Like, so man, we're so, like people don't understand, like what percentage of the population have any idea what Bitcoin is? So tiny. So if you're worried about being late, I promise you, you're not. And the way that you can tell is a load of dummies are now selling Bitcoin for some reason I can't thoroughly understand, right? So get stuck in, right? And then people, like 10 years from now, that people be like, oh, you're an OG. How did you get in that early? Were you one of the original cypherpunks? And obviously you're not, right? But like, perspective is a funny thing I think human beings struggle with. So yeah, it's funny. It's funny when you've been around a while.
Yeah, and I completely believe that. And I'm sort of departing the topic here a bit, but I think maybe that's kind of what frustrates me is like we've come so far from the separate money and state, and like even the strategic Bitcoin reserve, I think what a lot of people miss with this, and I mean, this is just my opinion of what could possibly happen, is if the United States government views Bitcoin or chooses to view Bitcoin as a digital gold exclusively, and the money printer continues, all of these benefits that you hear people talking about, less war, you know, a healthier society, all these things that fiat creates and promotes, those don't go away if Bitcoin is digital gold sitting at digital Fort Knox and everyone just holds onto it as a store of value. Like gold, because they supposedly have gold at Fort Knox, and the fact that they have a hard currency, gold, as a reserve and have for a long time, supposedly at least, hasn't prevented war. It hasn't prevented all of these horrible things that we attribute to fiat. And so we have to win the war and quit feeling like we're winning these little shallow victories of the strategic reserve or what have you, if we want the bright orange future that everyone pretends at least like they actually want. If I want less war, that means Bitcoin can't be digital gold. It needs to be the currency of the world. It needs to be money. And I think people begin
Lambo,
to lose.
When am I getting my Lamborghini, Michael? Get to the point here.
Or even Rick's getting impatient. All right. Sorry. I'll get off my soapbox. Let's move on to the next one. So, hey, good news. Good news. We've got another solo miner with a BitAx. Found a block. Our friend George Bodine, who we had on the podcast and on Bitcoin Banter, shared this. So exciting news. I feel like I know for anyone who listens regularly, you're probably getting tired of us, but like this is a big deal. If you, first of all, I think just in terms of what it means for the network, the decentralization that's being added, you know, I don't know. I think I saw somewhere they said, hey, it doesn't look like they found their own block template. So I don't know if the guys at Project 256 would agree that this is a solo miner because they're not creating their own block templates, but it's still exciting news. Somebody didn't buy the dip. They earned the dip by putting in the proof of work, buying their BitAx. Tony, I hate to keep putting you off, but Rick's got some exciting news related to BitAx. So Rick, why don't you take this one first?
Man, yeah, I got really lucky. Like, I think it was last week at some point. So there's a company on Twitter, which I think everyone should follow. Like, really great guys. I like their content as well. They're pretty funny, right? They post some pretty spicy tweets, but they're called Solo Satoshi. So they're one of these companies that sell the BitAx. And man, like sometimes, I mean, I'm famously been quite unlucky in the past, right? But every now and again, I do get lucky. And I won one of their online sort of competitions. You know, you share a post and tag a friend. And so this arrived actually like 30 minutes before the show. So there it is, a sexy new BitAx. So man, as soon as I get off this podcast, I mean, guys, to be honest with you, this podcast might have cost me a few Bitcoin, right? I might have been hitting a block every 10 minutes, right? So we need to wrap this up so that I can get this thing plugged in. But yeah, I mean, what an amazing result. Imagine hitting a block and like you say, all this stuff about decentralizing the network. I think there's real potential in it, you know, if the technology can continue to improve, if we can get more people interested. And you know what? More than anything, when I hear these stories, I just wish I could be a fly on the wall, of the guy, you know, in his house. Like, he probably gets up in the morning, right? He's had his eggs and he's drinking some coffee and he goes, oh, I'm just going to go and like look at my bit axe and see what's going on. And can you imagine him looking at this screen and seeing the words like block found? I would love to see the joy in that person just like losing their mind. I mean, I would guarantee for 5 minutes, because this is what would happen to me, I'd spend at least 20 minutes not believing it, being like, no, right, I have to check before I get excited. Did I actually hit a block? But no, tremendous. So yeah, let's get more of these things plugged in. Let's get more solo blocks. Let's put those big corporate miners out of business and let's have some fun doing it.
Absolutely, man. Remind me to send you my Bitcoin address so you can program it into your BitAx just in case you hit that block. so it goes to the right place. No, man. Solo mining is one of the most exciting things out there. I think every Bitcoiner should have one, you know, just for the sake of, you know, learning and, you know, doing your part, you know, for the global decentralization eventually of the hash rate. But solo mining, man, as far as we're concerned, we want everyone to have one. The same way that you're running a node, you run a solo miner. And you never know. I can guarantee you of one thing, though. It will be your number one addiction. You'll be glued to that screen 24/7, just waiting for those lights to start, you know, flickering, telling you that you found a block, just like this guy did. Congratulations to whoever that was, you know, well done. There's been a lot more of them, eh? Like, I mean, considering the odds are so low, it seems like every other week you hear of a story of a solo miner, you know, finding a block. So, hey, maybe it's a lot more common than we think. So for $200-$300, find yourself a solo miner, plug it in, and let's have some fun, guys.
Absolutely. All righty, guys, last story for you. So we've got, and I think this is a good illustration of what monetary inflation means. It probably isn't going to resonate with everyone the way it does with me, but Arnold Palmer, one of the greatest golfers of all time, averaged $58,000 per PGA win back around 1965. And then Russell Henley, who just won Palmer's event this year, won $4 million. So he earned more in this one event in nominal dollar terms, mind you, than Arnold Palmer won in his entire career, on course earnings at least. And so what Preston says here is, he said, that's fiat money inflating at 7.3% annually for 60 years. I think the trick with this is what many people see is like, oh, well, the game of golf has changed or whatever. But like, abstract that into other things. I mean, the cost of real estate or what have you. Like, a home should be a depreciating asset. Your home does not get nicer the longer you live in it, and the longer it exists, it begins to deteriorate. And yet we're seeing monetary inflation rear its ugly head in the housing market, and people think they're geniuses for buying real estate and it went up in price. They don't realize that their dollar is just affording them less house moving forward. Tony, I'll give you a chance to go first, because I feel like I've been handing Rick the baton too quickly. What's your takeaway?
This is just appalling, man. I mean, this is just inflation, you know, very clearly depicted in everyday life. I mean, can you imagine they printed 40% of the dollar supply in the last 2 years?
Crazy.
Like, do you understand what that means, what that represents in numbers? So you're this guy working your entire life, right? Putting your savings aside, thinking you're going to have a nice retirement. And these people come along and they just nuke 40% of your purchasing power, just like that. This is exactly what's happened now. And that 40% is going to keep rising until you have nothing left but like an imaginary monopoly number that can buy you nothing on the screen. This is the fiat system. You know, it serves the club behind the money printer, and it completely obliterates everyone else. This is why we Bitcoin. This is why everyone should be, you know, studying and running, like sprinting towards opting out of the dollar and fiat system, because it is completely draining your purchasing power. You are literally working for free. You know, like an abused little donkey. That's exactly what's happening. So hopefully more people, you know, understand this. But I don't know, you know, what the pain threshold is for that reaction to really kick in. Do you have to lose absolutely everything like I did before you, you know, you snap out of it? Or do you, you know, you start seeing the fire coming your way before it actually burns you completely.
Yeah. Rick, I know you're a fan of golf. I hear you've got quite a swing. Why don't you give your take?
So yeah, look, basically, the interesting thing about this is there's two ways to beat inflation, right? Option one, you can buy some Bitcoin, or option two, you'd better be a pro athlete, right? Because then you can just about keep up with inflation. Although what's interesting is, you know, Preston points out that this is a 7.3% increase annually. But what we know is that the fiat money supply expands at somewhere in the region of 15% annually, right? So actually, you know, I think there's maybe an argument to be made if you sat and did the maths in the round that Russell Henley's maybe getting underpaid compared to where Arnold Palmer's winnings would have been, you know, if they were inflation adjusted, like properly, not the 2% target or whatever. The thing I always find fascinating about this, and it's something I talk to my dad about all the time, because, you know, him and his friends are from a different time. And I say, you know, I ask him questions like, how much was your first house and stuff like this? And the numbers they give you are crazy, right? They're like, oh yeah, my first house was 25 grand. And you're like, what? And I mean, my dad's a Bitcoiner, right? He gets the whole problem. But I ask him, I'm like, look, you know, your friends have lived through this, right? They bought houses for 25 grand as well. But like, where's this disconnect that no one stops and goes, what the hell is going on? I used to be able to buy like a chocolate bar for 10p and now it's £1.50. You know, Arnold Palmer used to get paid 58 grand for winning a golf tournament. Now it's 4 million. And they'll search for these reasons, right? That must be true. Like, oh, well, you know, it's all on TV now and there's big sponsorship deals. And yeah, okay. Like maybe there's different revenue streams, but it's astonishing that there's a lot of people still alive who've lived through this monetary expansion, and yet very few of them can see it, even though the price of everything is changing so rapidly. That's the thing I think I'll probably go to my grave still scratching my head about. Like, you used to buy these things for 10p. Like, why are you not questioning this massive change?
Rick, I might have a partial answer for you. I think it's because the people who have lived through it have been the beneficiaries of it. They bought their house at 25K and now it's worth 500K. And so they look like geniuses. It's if you're starting off today near the tail end of the monetary expansion and the great fiat experiment, where you can't afford to get that first house that someone back in 1970 could for almost nothing. And so maybe it's less of, I think they'd probably concede, yeah, life's gotten more expensive and everything, but they've kept up because they've been investing in the stock market and they have a house or maybe a couple of homes or whatever. I think it's just like they aren't in a position where they feel it's a necessity for them to understand why, because they can get by. It's people who are starting out later in the game that are, you know, have to throw their hands up and say, I feel like I can't even begin. I think that's a lot of the hopelessness and a lot of the cultural deterioration that we see. Mm-hmm. You know, just a lack of necessity. So again, I think we got Max Payne before we get everyone on board, unfortunately. Any other comments, guys? Or are we good?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. For everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to help you evade the fiat debasement, the great fiat experiment that is destroying everything. We help with proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. Also help you protect your online privacy. We help set up privacy phones. We've got a Plan B residency option for you. Everything you need to be self-sovereign. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love to chat with you. Gents, thank you as always. It's always a pleasure catching up, and looking forward to chatting again here in a few days.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.